It's nice to see everyone this morning. The title of this sermon is Imagine, but when I woke up this morning and looked outside at the outside thermometer and saw 12 degrees, I thought, the only thing I can really imagine right now is being on a beach somewhere warm, and probably that's how all you feel too. The Bible is about recapturing our imagination, Michael Card writes. Peter Gomes, who until very recently was a minister of Harvard's Memorial Church, said that the Bible is a book of imagination. Don't think of Scripture, he says, primarily as rules or a list or regulations. Think of the Bible as a book meant to speak, to stoke, to fuel your imagination. It's our imagination, Walter Brueggemann says, that creates an alternative consciousness that allows us to see reality in different ways. But imagination, when I look around, seems to be in short supply. Looking around, I find myself and others trapped by my experience, almost imprisoned by my expectations based on what's gone before. I find my imagination stunted, because I look around and I just see what is. Whether it's facing extended relatives for the holidays, whether it's following an extended war in Iraq, whether it's listening in on the federal budget debates and finding that all that additional military spending is going to come from programs cut for the poor, I find myself trapped in my old patterns of thought. I find myself captive to the things that I expect. But certainly imagination is what we need if we're looking at the Magnificat. Certainly imagination is what needs to be fueling us when we hear those words Lenora said of Mary. To hear the Magnificat, God's Magna Carta, is to be swept into a whole nother world. It's to be swept into a place where God has turned everything upside down. To hear the Magnificat is to be hit broadside by an alternative consciousness, where the things that we believe make us great, the things that in our normal everyday life do seem great, things like power and position and money and status, are all just shrugged at by God. Where we are forced and pulled up short, that God isn't impressed with us. God isn't impressed by the things that we're impressed with. To hear the Magnificat is to almost feel God wince at our foolishness. And it's to hear God's words of vowing a revolution. This is a passage where God turns not to the prom queen, not to the millionaire mother, not to the bride with brains, but where God favors those in the world who are the least and the last. Where God chooses a little 13-year-old girl from a fourth world country with dark skin, dark eyes, and dark brown hair to be the mother of Jesus, to be the mother of the Emmanuel in the world. That takes some imagination. That takes even more imagination now than ever before because we've grown so familiar with the story. It takes imagination on our part. It takes imagination on the part of Mary. Martin Luther has this wonderful quote where he said, "It's a mere trifle that God became a human." But Mary, believing that of all the other virgin, unmarried, poor women out there, that she should be the one chosen to bear the mother of God. Now that's a miracle. It takes imagination to enter into this story again. Because the world that Mary sings about and the words that she uses don't really square with the world we see around us, do they? On the world stage, I don't see the powerful falling from their thrones too often. I don't see the poor lifted up. The reality I see doesn't seem to line up with what Mary's talking about here. I doubt what I can't prove, and I ignore what I can't see. but inner God. Because that's what God is so good at, is fueling our imagination. Let us go to Bethlehem and see what usual hopes, that our usual hopes are too small, that the pragmatism of the world is too inadequate to grasp the things you, O God, have in mind. That's a prayer that's been on my lips this past week. It appeared in The Other Side a few years ago. It was with that prayer, let me go to Bethlehem and see that my usual hopes are too small, that I started preparing for this week, this last week, as many of you spent preparing, finishing my Christmas shopping, wrapping my gifts. After blowing it a number of years in a row with my husband on Christmas gifts, he was very clear with me this year and said, it's hard to disappoint my husband. He screams affability, but I've managed every year. He said, all I want are just some framed photos of our summer vacation. That sounded like a good enough gift to me. So with that prayer echoing about my usual hopes, I started going through photos, looking for some to frame. And as with many things, what starts out as a very discreet task becomes several hours in the making. My first photo that I came across was one of my oldest son when he was about 4 years old. He had a Superman cape that he never took off. And everywhere we went, to the grocery store, to McDonald's, to the park, to the movies, he went with this cape on him. And I caught him at the park with these people kind of laughing in the background. I sat there thinking about imagination, thinking about my usual hopes, looking at this photo of my son as Superman. And I thought back to last summer when, I don't know if you guys remember, Gabe used to come to church in costume every week. Each week kind of more and more bizarre. And then I remembered this conversation I had with Ben Branda. Ben was telling me happily about his chosen superhero name. He was called Stall Boy. He was Stall Boy because whatever crime Ben was responding to, he had been delayed. He'd been stalled getting there. So he never actually interrupted a crime, but he still had a name. He was still a superhero. Later on that week, I went to the grocery store, and I came across a five-year-old in full cowboy breeches and hat. And I had this amused smile toward him, but he looked up at me like, what's your problem, lady? As if I pass cowboys with six shooters in their holsters all the time. Because see, in his world, he does. He rubs shoulders with cowboys and aliens and superheroes. He rubs shoulders with villains and policemen. They're part of what's walking around with him. Children don't suffer from a lack of imagination. Children have no problem living out their dreams. The world is just this backdrop for them, this setting for all the things that they're dreaming into reality. What they call real is just the stuff that supplies, like, the lighting. They've got a bigger drama that they're living in. They've got a bigger arena that they're acting out. Fabric scraps for children become the garments of kings. And boxes become Batmobiles and helicopters. I think that's what we miss somewhere at Christmas. That's why kids get the connection so well. Because as adults, we read Mary's story, but we're so trapped by what we see to be real. We see the facts. It's just a cardboard box. We see objective truth. The cape doesn't make you a superhero, honey. We see the truth about how the world works. That country's poor simply because it lacks natural resources. Or going back to a few weeks ago, we see scarcity and we fuel our fear of scarcity. We believe there really isn't enough to share because we don't see that anywhere. Reality for us as adults becomes what we see and what we can hold on to and what we can taste and touch. And as adults, the tools of the world become what we're told they're supposed to be. Things operate as they're supposed to operate. They conform to our expectations because we doubt what we can't prove. We ignore what we can't see. And we say that we're waiting for more facts to come in. We say that we would be imaginative, but it just doesn't square with reality, does it? We need more information before we can determine what we can believe or before we can act. But as Neil Postman says, we've convinced ourselves that we have a scarcity of facts, but we don't need more data. We have more facts than we can possibly consume. What we're dying from is a lack of dreams, a lack of courage. Ben and Gabe and the grocery store cowboy haven't been informed of those facts. They haven't been informed of those official adult restrictions on reality. Their world still has room for wonder, where everything, a yard of cloth and a box and another person, is suddenly packed with possibility, where the world can be whatever it is they intend for it to be. For us adults, somewhere along the way, the world ceased to be a stage for our fertile imagination. Somewhere along the way, instead of being the backdrop for what we are dreaming into being, the world has offered us a script, and we have just picked it up and read it unconsciously. Our jobs have become the plot, not the backdrop for these bigger dreams. The structures of the world, that reality that's suddenly now moved to center stage, has taken over the drama instead of just being the raw material, the setting for a new creation. But then God enters into that drama that we're acting out, into that script that we're reading just unconsciously. God has opened the door to a whole different world. Just when we were starting to get accustomed to where we were on the page, just when we were getting settled into our preset roles, a cowboy's walked through the door. Enter God. Because at Christmas, because in the Magnificat, we are assailed with God's declaration that these scripts are powerless against God's intentions. At Christmas, we are brought into a world and we are brought into a dead stop of our expectations. In the humdrum world we normally inhabit, where we normally make our way, poor unmarried moms and their babies face bleak prospects. December heavens stay silent, don't they? And Christmas carols arrive via the radio, not by angels. And God stays safely aloof. But enter into a church at Christmas, come out of that script that we've unconsciously picked up, and enter into God's language again, and enter into the Bible again, and our thin imaginations are stretched almost to the breaking point. Because in church, we have singing angels. We have perceptive shepherds. We have aged peasant women giving birth to men of destiny. We have an uneducated, unmarried virgin woman bearing the Son of God. We have rugged prophets in exile declaring that lions and lambs are going to lie down with each other again. We have people who are used to just scraping by, just holding it together, suddenly in the street saying, "Ho, everyone who's thirsty, come to this well of life. There's enough for everybody. Come, you don't need any money." In the bleak midwinter, God voices again that there is a new world awaiting. Our thin imaginations are stretched to the breaking point. How are we to make sense of this? How are we, people who have now grown so accustomed to our scripts, how are we to enter into this world again? How are we to enter into Mary's language again? How are we to look out at the world and see it all fresh and new? Because we've grown suspicious of Christmas angels and expectant virgins and songs in the night. Because we think we're more rational and analytical and skeptical. But I wonder if it's more truthful that our imaginations are just too limited. Dreams and the courage to believe and act on them. That's what God beckons us to again this Christmas. That's what Lucy Shaw, the poet, describes as faith, a widening of our imagination. Our prayers this Christmas can begin again to be based not on this narrow script of the world, not on the narrow definitions of reality that we bought into as adults, but on a new reality that God with us, Emmanuel, is doing something new in our midst. That against the backdrop of war, God is calling forth right now a coalition of peace. That in the midst of hopelessness, God's offering a new beginning. That God is setting captive free. That God is making lame people walk and blind people see. And then against the fear of scarcity, God is offering us more than enough. At Christmas, God stretches our imaginations as far as possible, asking us to believe that God is with us and that we are with God. William Willimon, a former dean at Duke, recalls a student coming to him and saying he was distressed because he was losing his faith. So Willimon probes a little bit and asks him what kind of faith he had that he was losing. And the student said, well, I have a problem. I have a problem with the virgin birth of Jesus. I can't believe it anymore. Willimon suggested, well, why don't you just stick with Mark? You know, Mark has no reference to the virgin birth. Just stick with Mark. Keep reading him for the year. See if that helped. And the student said, but don't I have to believe in the miraculous birth of Jesus in order to believe in Jesus, in order to believe I'm a Christian? In one sense, Willimon answered, no. In another sense, yes. We ask you to believe in the virginal conception of Jesus. And if we can get you to swallow that without choking, then there's no telling what else we can get you to believe. Come back next week, and we'll try to convince you that the poor are royalty and that the rich are in trouble. Come back the week after that, and we'll try to get you to believe that God rules the world, not nations. We start out with something small, like the virgin birth, and then work you up to some real outrageous assertions. This Christmas, God offers us to believe in some outrageous assertions. God offers us the biggest dreams imaginable. God offers us the biggest understanding of reality that there is. God is calling us to see the world not as a fixed determiner, not as a script that we've been reading from, but as a stage for a drama that God's acting out with us. That there's dreams where the hungry are filled, where the blind are sighted, and that's the work that God's doing. The world tells us to face facts, but out back, a baby is crying in a barn. The world will say, that's just the way it is. But out in the fields, shepherds have noticed a star that they haven't seen before. God calls forth us, the people of God, this day. And God calls forth our imagination. And God invites us again to begin living large on the world stage. A stage in which God is the actor and God is the drama, is building the drama. Where the wheel of history is broken. What part of you needs to come alive again this Christmas? What part of your imaginations needs to be reawakened? What things have you become accustomed to that you need to just let go of? Let go of, quit facing the facts, and enter into this new world that God's offering. It's a whole new world. Imagine that.